Wimmy wham wham wazzle, we're going to Miami.
Cowabunga gnarly, it's time to party here at the Bitter End Podcast with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan, but a slightly different version of Todd Jordan that wears like shorts and gels his hair back and doesn't give a fuck about anything.
Yeah, we're coming to you live from tropical Miami Beach. That's right, we are.
We flew all the way out there just to do this on location recording.
Yeah, we're in a hotel room overlooking the beach because there's far too much background noise out there. We're definitely not still in the UK and it's pissing it down with rain outside. 100% no, we're working on our tans. Oh, and also we're here to watch Police Academy 5, the one about Miami.
Fuck, Tom, I didn't know we were going to have to work on this holiday.
That's right. Assignment Miami Beach. Just you, when it rings, you pick up the phone and you do what it says.
In our case, it is assignment Miami Beach. We have been assigned watching Assignment Miami Beach.
God, we're going down a rabbit hole. Anyway, this one is the fifth Police Academy movie, 1988, year after the last one, baby.
Oh my God. And let me tell you that it's the first one where the trailer actually makes it look just a tiny bit different.
Oh, what? Because it basically tells you that there is a story, and it tells you the entire story.
The entirety of the story. We know that there's going to be a bit at the end, probably, where there's a chase on one of those like weird hovercraft boats with a big fan at the back.
Yeah.
We know Lasard is going to get kidnapped, because the voiceover guy says, when Lasard gets kidnapped, the gang take
go,
action.
Go out on cold-blooded revenge. They're basically on holiday in Miami.
Yeah, he's like, they're not going to make arrests, they're going to take arrest.
Yeah.
That almost works.
Yeah, and they're running down all the usual suspects that are going to be there. Big exception, Gutenberg. No, he's not listed. Bobcat's not in there.
No, so Sweet Chuck
no
either.
No, Sweet Chuck.
Sweet Chuck of mine.
Yeah, so we're just back down to kind of the... Oh, no, House.
House is
He's
back.
One of the more recent guys.
We've got Harris, Proctor. That, you know, the rest are all...
Mainstays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see what the absence of Goots is going to do to the dynamic. My guess is, fuck all.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously someone's got to be the... Because Gutenberg is basically the straight man, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like the audience surrogate.
Yeah, yeah. He's like the surrogate, the straight man. Like, so who is anyone supposed to relate to now?
Let's find out. Captain Lasard, probably.
Oh,
from
my
the sound
God. I mean, maybe this is finally, like, Hooks' time to stand in the centre spotlight, because I think she's quite relatable.
Yeah, and she gets a slight variation of her usual shtick. Like, there's a bit where she shouts a slightly different line to some people.
Yeah, she's not telling them to freeze, dirtbag. She's saying, move back, dirtbags!
Yeah, it's, like, slightly different.
Oh, vive la différence. A little bit of sun and Hook saying something different. I'm sure we're going to have a wonderful time. So, before we get stuck in...
Yes, Tommy T.
I want you to guess how much of a wonderful time we're going to have based on the rating that this film has gained on IMDb.
Does the M stand for Miami? It's the Internet Miami Database.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't go to the usual IMDb that we usually use. I just used this one that's just specifically for Miami-based entertainment.
Yeah.
Things like that. Yeah. So, okay, here we go. Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami Beach. Thank you. From 1988. The previous film got a 4.8.
4.8.
That was Citizens on Patrol.
And what's this one? What's this one?
This one is Assignment Miami Beach. Thank you very much. What do you think, Assignment Miami Beach? It's like having a conversation with a juggalo. what do you think it's got?
Well, I'm going to go in hard. I'm going to go in strong, Tom. I've got a real hunger for this film. It's boiling my blood in a good way. I got ants in my butt and I needs to strut. I really am excited about it. I'm feeling the same way about this movie as I did right before you and me watched Friday the 13th, part...
Was it 8 or 9?
Maybe 8. Mm. It might have been 8. Jason Takes Manhattan.
Oh, that was a lovely
I've
time.
I've got that kind of feeling. We're in a different... It's familiar characters in a different location. It seems preposterous. There's no way this machine can fly, but I want it to, and I'm going along
for the ride. A change
is
as good as a rest, as they say.
And you are under arrest.
Yeah. Oh.
There's that gag again.
Give me your fucking score! Stop! Stop wasting my time.
Don't be so uptight, man. We're about the beach. We got to chill.
All this time you spend just not giving me a score is time we could be watching this film.
All right, I am going to give it 6 pina coladas out of 10.
Well, you're a bold and brassy man. It got 4.4.
Oh, no. So it keeps falling.
I think... Wait, you thought it got 6?
I'm feeling pumped, buddy.
So that would have made it the second most highest rated film in this franchise.
Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah, well, fuck you. Fuck you, everybody. We're going to watch the film.
Fuck you very much.
Do you like pina coladas? Do, do, do. I'm getting caught in the rain. Boo, boo, boo. I let a lot of little people... They call the Paddington Peas. They call the Paddington Peas.
So the answer to that song is, do we like pina coladas?
And getting caught in the rain. Because crucially...
Well, we are not actually in Miami. Sorry to have previously told you that we were. No, we are still in fucking rainy, drizzly Brighton, UK. On the walk over to Tom's house to watch this movie tonight, I got caught in a tropical monsoon.
You were soaked, mate.
And I did not care for it.
No, but what did you show up on my door with?
2 pina coladas so that we could enjoy Assignment Miami Beach with the real Miami experience. 2 frosty cold pina coladas.
Yeah, we waited until the gang were on the beach.
Yeah, not even just the start of the movie, but when they got to the beach, we're like, crack these pina coladas open.
Yeah, we're in Miami, have a sip. Fucking hell, they're disgusting.
That is not how can people drink pina coladas? We both took one sip and it was just like, oh my god.
It's like a fucking can of pudding.
Yeah, it's like pudding with sort of medicinal type booze in it. Like not the fun kind of burny grown-up booze, but like, you know, like sort of, knit medicine or something.
Oh, yeah. That will be my enduring memory of Assignment Miami Beach. I mean...
You know what? Pina coladas? No. Pina coladas. That's what I call them.
Yeah.
Hey-oh.
Sick bants, mate. Aside from the ghastly drink that we had, how did you feel about our watching experience of Police Academy 5, the one where they go to Miami?
Well, weirdly, despite how much I did not enjoy the drink, the film got a lot better after I had my pina colada.
Okay, interesting. Do you want to know what, like, my one sentence review?
What's your one sentence review?
Too much plot.
There was an awful lot of
plot getting in the way of the guys trying to do some jokes.
Yeah, and, you know, the jokes weren't necessarily the best. There were
I think it was at least a poor joke showing.
2 thigh slappers, I'd say.
I can't even remember
sort of
them.
Scattered about an 86-minute movie.
Other than that, I don't know, mate.
There's a whole lot of kerfuffle to try and get them into Miami. And then once they're there, they've got nothing to do for a little while. So, that, you know, volleyball, surfing.
They say Miami Beach so much in the beginning of the film before they actually get there. Like, you know, to kind of really signpost. And we were like, oh, fuck, is it going to be like Jason Takes Manhattan where they don't really get there until the last 15 minutes, but they're just going to spend the whole film being like, can't wait to get to Miami Beach.
Wah, 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 wah.
But they do get there a lot earlier. But let's just break it down, wind it back.
Wind it back, relax, reset the tracks.
How does this guy kick off?
Well, a lot like the others, we've got a shot of Anywheresville, USA, city.
Oh, the night skyline, yep.
Classic, awesome Police Academy theme that you know so well. And then the music fades up, and it is a sad version of the Police Academy theme. Harris and Proctor
Yeah.
The sort of the villain and stooge that we've had, you know, a good couple of movies now. They are breaking into the office of Commissioner Hurst.
Yes. Yeah,
so under cover of night because they want to steal Commandant Lasard's file.
Yeah, so Hurst, he's been in all of the films, I think, pretty much. He's the guy who wanted Johnson's. And Harris wants to, like, he's fucking sick of Lasard's shit. He's like, I should be the commandant of the police academy.
I don't know why.
There's got to be something in this file that means that I can get rid of Lasard. And he finds it.
Yes, on Lasard's file, the dates don't quite match up. Turns out Lasard had hit the mandatory police academy retirement age the year before. He should have retired already.
Mm.
So Harris wastes no time in bringing this news to the world. But not before there is a slightly strange gag where they're in Commissioner Hurst's office and Bob the janitor's coming. And so they hide in a cupboard. Bob the janitor knocks on the door. He's like, Commissioner Hurst, are you in there? And Harris thinks on his feet. He finds this bra that he'd found
in Hurst's desk.
So he like puts... like waves the bra out the door and is like, pretends to be Hurst. He's like, yes, I'm in here, but I'm busy. Can you go away? And Bob the janitor's like, yeah, cool. I totally understand.
Yeah,
like,
bro.
I get it, bro. You know, you do you. And as he's walking off, Harris goes, thanks, Bob. And then Proctor, also in the cupboard, goes, yeah, thanks, Bob. The joke being, Bob now thinks that he's having sex with a man in a bra.
Woohoo! Fuck, there wasn't the Blue Oyster Bar.
No, exactly. So spoiler alert, we don't get the Blue Oyster Bar. But don't worry, guys, your homophobia is still in this movie because shortly after that gag, there is a bit where we see Commissioner Hurst and he makes a little sideways line about how the place is a mess because his janitor quit mysteriously.
Because he didn't want to work for a gay man. Bravo, 1988. Bravo.
Yeah. I would have rather have the Blue Oyster Bar, to be honest with you.
Yeah, like at least...
I'm getting Stockholm Syndrome.
Yes, exactly. Now, yeah, like this was just kind of like, no, I haven't seen that four times already. It's not strangely kind of growing on me like a fungus. That was just new. I don't like it. So anyway, this is the thing. And then we go back to the police academy. And another like group of cadets are graduating.
Yeah, these ones look a little bit more competent than the gang.
They look a little bit more competent, apart from last, and by no means least, House is here, everybody!
Yay!
House, remember House from the last film?
He was barely
David
in
Spade's,
it.
David Spade's not here anymore. Just House. Remember, he was funny because he's big. He's big. That's his thing. He's big. His name's his House because he's big. And
now here's the thing with House. Just to recap your memory, he is supposed to be Hightower's nephew. He's played by a wrestler called Tab Thacker. He's huge, huge, big lad. Massive happy smile on his face constantly. Was barely in the last film. Like just barely, blink and you'll miss him. In this film, he is in basically every single shot. But just sitting happily in the background, smiling. He's got almost no lines. He does almost nothing, but just whatever the gang do, House is also there.
Yeah.
And he's smiling so much, you just expect there to be all of these lines that he improvised himself, where it's just like the characters are like, quick, we got to go find Commandant Lasard and tell him. And they walk off camera, and then House stands up and goes, and I, House, will also go.
Yeah, so this film did not have a lot of laughs in it for me, but the thing that made me laugh was just every time that House pops up on screen, which is at least 50% of the film.
Oh, so much more than that.
He's just in there in the background, just smiling. And then you just like, if you just watch the film and you're not enjoying it, just play the game that whenever House pops up on screen, you just go, and also House!
He came along.
Yeah, it's like, also House was there. It's like... So anyway, yeah, House has graduated. He's part of the gang. He's not going to do anything at all.
But he's going to have more screen time than any other character, and I love it.
And so the other big thing that happens at this graduation is that Hurst comes up and says, banging news for you, Lasard. You've been nominated Police Officer of the Decade. and you're going to go to the big award ceremony at Miami Beach. Booyah! But also you have to retire.
Oh. Wah, wah. And he's like, with this news, it's like, they don't... Commissioner Hirst announces this in front of a massive audience without discussing it with Lessard first.
Yeah. He's just when like,
he hears
fuck
the
off,
news
mate.
That he has to retire, he's just like, Lessard's whole... His whole face falls, like his world crumbles away around him. And he just can't comprehend of having to do this, having to retire, even though, you know, he's well over, he's a year past
clearly sundowning, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's just like...
But then it cuts around to all the other gang and they're all like looking at each other being like, this is bullshit. And they all race to Lessard's office to go check he's okay, and House is also there. And they're just like talking to him, and they're like, no, Lessard, you don't have to take this. And then he has this moment of resolve. He looks at his goldfish and it just gives him some strength, and he's like, you know what, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna retire, but I'm gonna go out with a bang. I'm bringing all my favorite recruits with me to Miami for the big retirement party. And House goes, yes, and I too will also attend.
And like, there's just like, this scene is, so Steve Guttenberg is not here, Bobcat Goldthwait is not here, two very talkative members of the cast. Also, you don't have Sweet Chuck, so you got this stripped back to this core group of recruits, and also House, and they are like, it's such a weird scene, because you're saying like, fuck, they're all talking and delivering lines that aren't like, one-liners and stuff like that.
They're actually moving the plot forward.
Or they're trying anyway. And it's just, it's like, fuck, like literally all of them have like more lines than they've probably had in about two films in this one scene. And it's weird seeing the shift, like the power, this Gutenberg-less ship is just flailing wildly. It's like, what, we're going to give fucking like Hightower all the lines now? What is happening? And also, it's like that everyone just fucking loves Lessard.
Yeah.
And I don't remember him actually having that much interaction with all these recruits in the first film. Like, he has a lot of, like, FaceTime with Gutenberg when he's like, well, yes, we're all trapped.
Yeah.
And has his existential crisis. But there's none of that where he's like, oh, Tackleberry, I like guns as well. Here's my goldfish, golf, etc. Jokes, blowjobs. All of his usual shtick. He doesn't do that.
No.
But they just love him. And they're also going to Miami Beach. Let's signpost that we're going to Miami Beach by saying it all the fucking time until we eventually get to Miami Beach.
But before we do, there is a subplot that is bubbling under the surface, bubbling under. This is what we're talking about when we said there's too much plot. There's not just one. There's like one and a half, mate.
Yeah, so the Lessard thing is like the reason to go to Miami Beach, but like
there's a kink in the armor.
So you know how like usually there's like stakes that happen in these films in the last 15 minutes and there's a really boring chase? They introduce the stakes like in the first half of the film.
Yeah, so we cut to the Museum of Fine Art. And there's three cat burglar bros. They're sort of all dressed in black. They've got grappling hooks. They're a bit bungly. They kind of, you know, they're a bit clumsy.
Bit Three Stooges-y.
They're like, oh, you got to break that window. Do it quietly. They do it the most noisy way you possibly could. Doesn't matter.
Now you're knucklehead. I told you.
And they steal some diamonds. And then we're like, oh, what's that about? And then in the next scene, while Lessard and the gang are all dressed up in their like Hawaiian shirts and crazy outfits to go,
and also House.
And also House is there with this weird shirt. There's a map of the world.
Mm.
While they're all getting onto the plane, these three crooks are also getting on the plane with a holdall full of the diamonds, looking all shifty. Now, the lead crook is a guy called Tony. He's played by the actor René Aubergenois.
Great name.
So he may be familiar to some viewers because he famously played Father Mulcahy in the MASH movie. And he also shows up in like some episodes of Eerie Indiana, which also starred one of his henchmen from this film, is also a regular on Eerie Indiana, stuff like that. But yeah, he's a bit of a ledge. And he's basically playing this like wise guy criminal as if he's Woody Allen.
It's so weird. Actually, like, you know, he is, for my money, he is the Medal of Honor in this movie. He is the star turn. Because even though all the rest of the cast, they've all got their a bit more time to shine, they still don't. And then you just got this guy who's playing like, yeah, like this really quintessential, like Italian-American mobster kind of...
He's a wise guy.
Stereotype, wise guy, but like Woody Allen...
Oh, geez, would you pass me the diamonds there already, Poindexter? It's like that.
Yeah, but with also a bit of Three Stooges thrown in there. Yeah, it's like, oh, geez, oh my God, we gotta get the diamonds for the boss. Yeah, yeah, damn knucklehead.
Out of
the
way.
Let me in, let me in, let me in.
Oh, jeez. I don't believe it. We're on the same plane.
Boss, you want we should,
What, are you crazy?
Come on, come on, come on. Let me in there, let me in.
Yeah, it's weird. It's, yeah, love it.
Yeah, he's, when him and his goons are on screen, that is peak watching. And they've also got this amazing, like, Miami Vice style, you know, like these kind of like pastel coloured suits that with like jackets are too big and the sleeves rolled up. Oh, mwah. Into that.
We get some gags on the plane. So Lasard like inexplicably accidentally pulls the taps off of the bathroom sink, and then Tony, the lead crime boss guy, gets trapped in there and gets a bit wet.
He gets wet. Earlier on in the airport, some people fell over. Also, Harris is there. His trousers fell down. It's really highbrow stuff, folks. It's real fucking side splitters here. House, he was there too. He gets up on the plane and moves over to the other side of the plane, and the plane tips over because he's a big, heavy guy. And then he's like, can you move over the other side, sir? And he's like, nah, I don't want to do that. But we're about to serve the meal. He gets up and moves because he likes food, because he's a big...
He's a big lad.
No.
He looks so happy doing it. I cannot begrudge him.
Yeah.
There's also a scene with Callahan, who was the sort of the busty, tough lady commander. And her character has now just clearly devolved to just be tits on legs. That's what she is there for.
Yeah.
She says some lines, but they are all basically related to her chest. And there's a gag where she is trying to sleep on the plane and some little boys are looking at her tits.
That is it.
That's the gag.
It's not even joke. Good one, film. So basically, yeah, we've got the crooks and we've got Lasard. And we get the classic comedy bag swap.
Oh, no.
So Lasard, like, is fanning about. He's dropping golf balls everywhere and tripping people up. They drop their bag. Lasard has the same bag. He picks up the bag with the diamonds. The diamonds are hidden inside of a camcorder. And now more capering is going to ensue. There's just way too much plot in this for a Police Academy movie. I want to be able to check out for a good hour and just watch them just do the same jokes they've been doing for every other film and not have to worry about plot until the speedboat chase at the end. In this, I had to worry about it all the way through.
You know what, Tom? You can't fucking check out because there's more plot about to happen. They get to the fucking hotel where the police officer of the decade conference is happening. It's not just an award. Apparently, it's like a conference. There's all of this extra shit.
Yeah.
And Lasard keeps making a big point about how, every time I've attended this before in the past, there's always been a wonderful demonstration of police procedure at the end of the event. I remember last year they arrested everybody above the rank of lieutenant and put us all in prison overnight. Oh, it was a wonderful time. I wonder what display of police procedure they'll be doing this year. And then he basically turns to the camera, looks you, the viewer, directly in the eye and goes, so remember, I'm supposed to think that there's going to be a police procedure later on, yeah? So if anything weird happens, I'll probably think it's all meant to be happening, yeah? Remember that? You got that? Okay, good. Back to the gags.
Okay, good. Now, here's the guy that's filling in for Steve Guttenberg.
Boom! So we get fake Steve Guttenberg, who is a character called Nick, who is supposed to be Lassard's nephew, who just is a police officer in Miami. And he's basically a beach cop, whimmy wham wham wazzle.
Oh yeah, he's also got very gootsy, sexual predatory kind of tendencies going on. Like he's like... He's meant to, yeah, you're kind of like, okay, this guy seems kind of like the everyman, except like a pervert. He just goes up to somebody and starts like rubbing this woman's neck. And it's kind of like, hey, I'm the poolside masseuse. And she's just kind of like, haha. She doesn't take it that well, but like, you're a policeman and you're just basically groping a stranger. That is not cool, bro.
And she even says the line, it's something like, you know what really relaxes me? And he's like, what relaxes you? And she's like, when strange men start touching me uninvited, which is what we're thinking. And he takes that as a sign that he's in.
As like, fucking I knew if I did this long enough, eventually it would pay off. And so, but this woman, she throws him in a pool. There's a lot of people falling in water in this. She turns out to be another cop. Her name is Kate. She is kind of like the Kim Cattrall-esque character in this film. In that, like, the kind of like the attractive love interest who will 100% not be in the next film.
Yeah, doesn't get any gags, just kind of has lots of scenes where she's constantly brushing her hair despite being like a well-trained... Oh, and she's got a karate scene where she's like training some people on karate. Obviously fucking Winslow pops up and does his like stupid dubbed Japanese kung fu...
Which he's done now for four films. This is like out of five films, he's done it in four. So obviously between one and two... He figured out this shtick and everyone thought it was fucking hilarious. But in this one, he just doesn't even try.
He doesn't do any sound effects. He's just wearing like a karate outfit.
And does the miming, kind of the dubbing kind of...
That's it.
That is it.
That is it, mate.
Yeah, so like basically now that we're in Miami, there's little bits of plot going on, but we just get a montage of like, they're like, let's just go out there. We'll just film some stuff. We'll just see what works. Most of it doesn't.
What's your favourite bit from this montage-y sequence?
I like that Hooks probably gets the best Hooks bit we've seen in a film, where there's like a police training thing at this conference, and they're trying to get her like, we need you to move this crowd back, like a fake protest, and then she's like, oh, excuse me, please, we now need you to move back.
Excuse me, no, we need come. To keep
hell
it.
No, we won't go.
It would really
hell
help
no,
us a lot if you just
hell
back
no,
up.
We won't go. Hell no, we
back
won't go.
Off, you hell turkeys! No, I'm a police officer, and when I talk, you listen. Now get your butts the hell back there before I really get mad.
And she really lets him have it, and everyone. Back steps back because they're so afraid of her, and they all start falling into the swimming pool behind them because, hey, Miami Beach, whimmy wham wham wazzle, cowabunga. And then what I really like is that the last few people to get into the pool, they couldn't kind of jump in fast enough, so they're just really waiting patiently for like the person in front of them to fall in there, to kind of like, better fall in. And it kind of like kind of takes you out a little bit, but I enjoyed that.
You know what I liked? I liked a moment of I had a moment of sadness and a moment of joy.
Ooh.
So my moment of sadness is Proctor, who's Harris's stooge. He's, you know, an idiot, but one of the baddies, really.
Yeah.
But he's such an idiot that he doesn't even know he's a baddie. This is kind of the thing.
Yes.
And all the gang are playing frisbee on
like
the beach. They're all, like, throwing the frisbee back and forth to each other. And Proctor is there. And... Proctor's there and he is just jumping up and down being like, guys, throw the frisbee to me, throw me the frisbee, I want the frisbee, and no one will throw it to him, and he's too dumb to be sad about it. And then eventually Hightower throws the frisbee, and because he's strong, Proctor catches it and he like shoots off into the air as if he'd been shot out of a cannon.
I like that bit. That was one of the few bits that actually kind of like got a chuckle out of me. There's also like a bit like quite like where Proctor accidentally sets fire to Harris's straw hat.
That was my moment of joy.
Oh,
talk us through
sorry.
It.
So there's this bit where like Harris is they're at the bar in the evening, drinking disgusting fucking pina coladas, and Harris is like macking on to this beach babe.
I got a little suntan today, too.
That's nice.
Maybe you'd like to come up to my room later and put a little lotion on it. No?
While Proctor is at the bar, just trying to light up a big stogie, have a big cigar, and he kind of like chomps the end off and he spits it out and it hits Harris in the neck. And he's like, what the fuck? You know, you're messing with my game. I'm trying to chat up this lady over here. And then like he lights a match and throws it away and it lands on Harris's straw hat.
Yeah.
Which then starts to catch fire. And then it properly, you know, bursts into flames.
Because Proctor, to try and put it out, grabs a lady's drink and throws it on the hat and it just goes up in flames because she was apparently drinking pure propane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Propane and propane accessories. That's what she likes. And that was just like a good bit of like visual, you know, just a bit of kind of slapsticky. I mean, someone's head being caught on fire is always kind of funny, isn't it?
It was a great, great time.
There was a terrifying Tackleberry moment where he's on a shooting range trying out all these new guns.
I forgot about this scene.
Well, it really affected Todd.
Sorry.
He fires this one gun and just goes, oh, yeah. Just, like, looks at this gun like he's just got the biggest fucking boner for it.
You can see him trying to work out if he can stick his dick in
the
barrel.
And then he just like grabs another massive gun and rolls around the floor and starts shooting. And it's like, oh, yes, the power. And like, Callahan comes over and is like, we need to take that away from you now. And he's just like, no, I need this. And he's like, when we get home, we'll get you some of your own. He's like, okay.
It's so disturbing.
Haunting. It's gone beyond being like this funny thing that like, oh, he's funny because he's incredibly violent and doesn't understand social interactions. It's just, he's a maniac. Like it's just, oh, he's one of those people who like probably gets off at like watching car crashes or something like that.
I think you might be right there, buddy.
Yeah, it was.
He's a Johnny Wrong'un.
Yeah, there was something in it that was just, it just went beyond being kind of like this kind of like, I liked Tackleberry in the first film, but now he is just like, he's got this horrible violent fetish and it is haunting. Whew. Still made you laugh.
It did make me laugh. I was laughing more at like you sat next to you on the sofa while your favourite character was in, from previous films. You've clearly stated Tackleberry's your boy, and with this one, I was watching you just have to like reconcile in your head that your favourite character has now become like very problematic.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and just but watching you try to work out if you can still like him or not.
I don't think I like Tackleberry anymore.
And House was also there.
He was. He probably had some scenes as well.
Meanwhile, while this like montage of just like the gang enjoying the conference is going on, it's kind of intercut with all of this like heist capers.
Yeah,
Woody Allen Crook and his like goons are trying to get the camera back off Lasard because it's full of diamonds. And there's like some really cool like 80s synthy like heist music. And, you know, it's like trundling along in like total Miami vibes. We're cringing our way through our pina coladas, just fucking choking them down like cough medicine. And long story short, they end up like kidnapping Lasard to get the diamonds, right?
Yes, they do. And then like the rest of the gang are like, we gotta get him back. By this point, the fake Goots, Nick, has become firmly kind of like ensconced in the gang. He's really in there. They hide out in like the penthouse or something.
Well, the reason that they do that, Tom, is do you remember earlier where Lasard made such a big deal about how he loves the demonstration of police procedure every year?
Oh, I remember something like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Did you remember that? Did you pick up on that?
I didn't really think it would be important.
No, well, guess what, motherfucker? Suddenly, your chickens are coming home to roost. Because Lasard gets kidnapped and he thinks it's all like part of the show. He thinks it's a demonstration of how to rescue a kidnapped victim. And so he goes along willingly. Yes. So at every turn, he goes with his kidnappers and he's like, well, you could go down there, but the gang will easily find me and catch you. So, and then all the fun will be over too quickly. And I'm having such a wonderful time. Why don't we all go up to my penthouse? It'll be easier for you to defend. And the police will have a harder time getting in and getting rid of you.
Yes, yes. And so he's helping out, like the hostage.
Yeah, he's being super nice. He gives them ice cream out of his fridge.
But then after he's like, oh, you guys should ask for a helicopter. That would be a wonderful way to escape. And then he suggests something else. And then Woody Allen turns to him and is like, that's a shit idea, mate. And the look on Lasard's face, his heart breaks. Like, this was the film where I kind of realised, actually, the guy who's playing Lasard has got the best kind of, like, chops. For, you know, acting like in terms of, like, he does his role very well as that kind of like befuddled, weird goldfish fucking old man. But then he just has those moments of like real pathos, real earnest kind of feeling. And you're just like, oh, fuck, knife in my heart. Yes.
You do not hurt Lasard. You do not do that to my baby boy. Well, also an old man.
And now that's why I feel like, oh, this is why all the... I understand why the rest of the Police Academy gang are like so fond of him, because you just kind of like, oh, I didn't even realise I'd taken him into my heart, but I had. And he was... That man was... Woody Allen was mean to him.
You can't be mean to the police officer of the decade.
I know. And then one of the other goons like, hey, come on. He did come up with the idea of the helicopter, and he's like, oh, jeez, I'm really sorry. Can I put you in my new movie? It's going to maybe have Scarlett Johansson in it. Something like that. And then off they go.
Do you know how they go off? They go off on a fucking speedboat chase.
Oh, my God.
But it's those weird speedboats I mentioned before with, like, the big fan on the back. It's like a very Florida thing.
Yeah, for like going through, like, the bayou, through the
swamps. Yeah, and there's, like, gators and stuff like that. And we get this, like, weird montage of the gang, like, tracking them down on these boats. There's, like, fake Goots and his, like, characterless girlfriend. Yeah. Are there just sort of pulling gormless faces, going... Riding
House
along.
Was also there.
And House was also there. Hooks is piloting a boat on her own, and she's like got this weird legs akimbo shot with the camera like right between her legs looking up at her face.
It's very flattering for everybody, isn't it? These
and
shots.
There's a bit with Callahan is singing Ride of the Valkyries in like a big operatic falsetto going like, it's all right.
Yeah, the gang fight.
She doesn't normally get many jokes.
No, she doesn't. I mean, it's the one bit where, like, it's the one scene that wasn't dependent on her having boobs.
Yeah, exactly. And I looked it up. She improvised that herself.
Good for her. She was like, I've got to do something to get the top half of my body. Or, like, you know. Like,
well, either that or she's just like, I can sing as well. If this is the end of the franchise, please bear this in mind for my CV.
Yeah. And then... they fight off all the crooks. Harris nearly gets eaten by a rubber crocodile, which Hightower jumps in and wrestles. And it's just obviously a grown man throwing a fake crocodile.
You know that classic scene, people, especially in like slightly shit 50s and 60s. Like monster movies, and like there was a bit of this in like the Batman TV show or something, which is just like a man wrestling with a rubber animal.
Yeah,
it's a classic thing
that Bela Lugosi did in whatever one of those Ed Wood films where like they didn't have the motor for the mechanical octopus, so you're just like literally pulling the thing on top of you.
Yeah, and going, oh no! This example of Hightower wrestling the alligator, it is the worst example of this I have ever seen. This man cannot make a rubber alligator move in any way that looks like it is even remotely alive. He's just like folding it, he's like crumpling it up, he's just sort of shaking it violently.
quick, cut to House. He's also there.
Yeah.
And he was just looking on going, ooh, that alligator better be worried. Thanks, House.
I'm gonna
good gag.
This is going to go in my memoirs.
Oh, dear. Bringing down the house. The house story.
I like it.
And that brings us basically to the end of the film. So we finish, is it where Lasard gets his big award?
So, slightly before that. The big denouement is that Tony, the Woody Allen gangster, he's retrieved the diamonds that he's lost. The mob boss that he's supposed to give them to, he's there on another boat. And he's like, I got your diamonds for your buddy. And he's like, I'll take those diamonds after you kill all your hostages. We can't have any loose ends. And he's like, oh, geez, well, Harris, I don't mind killing him because he's a total douchebag, but I've kind of taken a bit of a liking to the old man. Jeez. And the mob boss is like, nah, mate, you've got to do him in. You've got to do his nut in. You've got to do it.
Do
kill
it,
him.
Mate.
Kill him. Mate. Murder him, mate. Go on, do
oh,
it.
God,
go on, do it. Do it, mate. Do it. Kill him. Goes on for a bit like that, and then he's like, oh, well, yeah, I suppose Nietzsche said something about you, because sometimes you gotta kill the old man, oh, jeez. And he makes this tough decision, and he goes through, and at the exact moment that he's about to do it, guess who's also there?
Oh, House is also there.
House is there! But at this point, he actually fucking does something. He gets dropped through the roof of the boat and just like lands on them all, and then
that's it.
Cut, everybody's fine.
Great stuff. Thrilling end to a very boring 15-minute chase. And then we can cut to the final kind of award ceremony thing.
Yeah.
Lasard is like, oh, I'm so proud of everything I've done. This is absolutely wonderful. Let me give some medals to people for all this stuff we did in Miami. We're going to turn Hightower into Lieutenant Hightower because Steve Guttenberg is not here for us to promote him. So we are just going to arbitrarily pick some character at random.
It's because he wrestled the alligator.
Because he saved Harris's life. But it's just, you know, like, there's that bit at the beginning of the scene where everyone has loads of lines. And then it's weird. Like, these films that you watch them and there's characters everywhere. But then also they are nowhere. It feels like they've all disappeared for like the middle, like 45 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I do.
When you just kind of go like, who has been on screen? Because I don't really remember any of them doing anything apart from, oh, there's House. but like, they're like, Hightower. It's like, was Hightower the hero? Was he the... But what about fake Gutenberg? Anyway, he gets given that, and then the guy's like, oh, by the way, you know how like I totally surprised you in the last sort of ceremony by saying you have to retire? You don't!
That's it! That's
See you for Police Academy 6, everybody!
That's the only explanation. He just says, I've decided to let Lasard stay on as long as he wants.
Credits, please.
All the gang pick up Lasard, including a bunch of cops we've never seen before who don't even know who the fuck he is.
Harris falls through a giant drum.
Yeah. And then...
It's another classic strong ending for a Police Academy film.
Credits roll.
Thanks. See you next time for City Under Siege, I guess.
Don't drink pina coladas.
Yeah, that's the real lesson learned is don't drink pina coladas. They're fucking gross.
So, Tom, looking back
on
those 86 minutes.
Yeah.
How do you feel, buddy?
It's an oddity, isn't it? Because I feel, I don't know, like, it's weird. Like, you don't think that Gutenberg is necessarily bringing a lot to the table, but I think you kind of need that gel, because the everyman, the fake Goots, gets introduced halfway through, and then he is not like the main hero of the incredibly boring chase at the end, which is usually Gutenberg's bit. So, like, you know, you didn't have like fake Goots making a speech at the end or anything like that. So I think they're finding their feet a bit.
I know. The franchise has been rocked by a change of personnel. But I tell you what, I did enjoy it, and it's entirely because, I think, of the change of scenery. I'm a bit sick of Anywheresville, USA, which does make me worry a little bit in City Under Siege.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's the city in that question is going to be this no-name city. If it was a specific city and it's like, hey, everybody, we're all going to... I suddenly can't think of a single city. Leeds! We're all going to Leeds.
Larging it in Leeds.
Yeah, and that was the city that was under siege. Brilliant.
Yeah, the other thing that concerns me is that City Under Siege is the only one that I clearly remember watching. I'm sure I've seen bits of other Police Academy films, like, because I was aware of like Bobcats kind of shtick.
Yeah.
But I think this is the one that I've seen the most, you know, like the highest proportion of.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be a bit similar to this one in that it's actually got like a bit more, rather than that thing of introducing plot in the last act is where they actually like, and now here is the plot. I think it's going to be City Under Siege implies something a bit more grand. I think, you know, there's going to be a plot at the beginning and it's going to go all the way through to the end.
Yeah, I know.
Which
weird.
Is weird. Yeah, uncomfortable. I don't know about that.
Okay, so I guess if you've maybe seen it, you can't really comment. I'm pretty sure I haven't seen it, so I'm going to say I assume that the City Under Siege, it's either going to be organised crime, right? There's like some massive organised crime ring, or, oh, this seems very unrealistic, but like, martial law or something. There'll be like some big national security incident and like the military police will have to come in and the gang will have to contend against them.
Yeah,
something like
that. It's basically like the film Outbreak, you know, when they have to quarantine off like the whole of anywhere USA and the gang are really conflicted because they have to like
kill innocent people.
Yeah,
that are
who are trying to get out. They're trying to escape. And they're like, I know that you didn't ask for this, but you can't get out. You can't leave. Obviously, Tackleberry's fine with it.
Yeah, exactly. And
dark turn for the franchise.
Dark turn. They just have to lead the family with the two children off into the tent.
Yeah.
They never come out. Single gunshot. Just plastic bags moving out the back. And House is also there.
I wonder if House will be back.
I hope so. He's literally kind of at this stage the only one I can... Like, if we get House, Hooks, Callahan is growing on me quite a bit.
Yeah.
And Harris.
Yeah.
I'll be happy.
Yeah. I like that, like, House is, like, a very easy game of Where's Wally? in that, like, you cannot miss him. But he's just like, oh, there he is, found him. I actually missed Bobcat. Even though I don't really find his shtick doesn't really make me laugh, like he's an enjoyable he
brings a certain chaos.
Yes.
Now I read, I believe the reason he didn't come back was because of a pay disagreement, and sadly, once they worked out, okay, well we can't get Bobcat because you know this pay dispute. That means we also just shouldn't bother bringing back Sweet Chuck because without Bobcat, there's no point in having Sweet Chuck. And so Sweet Chuck would have been like, I would have done it.
Oh, that sucks, man.
I know.
Were you saying that, like, Nick, fake Goots.
Fake Goots,
That, like, his lines were written for Gutenberg.
Yeah, they wrote the screenplay with Gutenberg in mind, and then he eventually decided not to do it, and they were just like, oh, we'll just have to write in this second character. So not all of it, but a lot of, like, the Gootsiest lines, where he's, like, really...
Goosing hard.
He's in the top 90s on the Goose.
Really, really, really perving on people, yeah.
Yeah, those were originally written for the Gootster.
Oh, wow, okay. Well... We'll have to see how, if this ship can correct this gootless ship, how it writes itself next time.
Yes, on the Bitter End podcast when we watch City Under Siege, Police Academy 6. So thank you for joining us on the show. As always, you can tweet us at Bitter End Pod or find us on Facebook at Bitter End Pod. Please do let us know what you think. Because we always love hearing from you and we always try our best to reply. We don't say this very often either, but don't forget to give us a review on iTunes if you can, because it makes us feel really, really good and it also helps other people discover the show.
Oh, yes.
Until then, I'm Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny. And stay the fuck away from pina coladas.
If you like pina coladas...